Good morning, this is Brian Trumbore with the Week in Review for Saturday, October 17th. Nine leading earnings reports were issued this week, and they sum up where we stand on the economy these days. The environment continues to improve slowly, but it's virtually impossible to forecast 2010. And you didn't hear one peep all week about the ever-present geopolitical concern, Iran, in terms of its ability to influence the markets and investor psychology. Here's my snapshot of the nine companies that, to yours truly, were of the most import. J.P. Morgan Chase and Goldman Sachs knocked the cover off the ball, earning $3.6 billion and $3.2 billion, respectively. Though particularly in the case of Goldman, the street was irrational in its expectations and these shares declined some on the news, though they were up almost $140 off the March lows. Intel and IBM issued solid reports, better than expected for these two tech heavyweights, with Intel raising its earnings and revenue guidance for the fourth quarter, a significant move, while IBM raised its earnings guidance but offered only so-so news on the sales front. Citigroup and Bank of America disappoint as they continue to get hammered by credit losses and further increases to loan loss reserves, but in both cases it's still a far cry from the days when survival for both was in serious question. Today, Citigroup shares trade for $4.60, up from $1 in March, while Bank of America is at $17, up from a low of $2.50. Both also express confidence that delinquencies on the credit front have leveled off with a decent outlook for further improvement. Then you have three one-offs. Johnson & Johnson was disappointing on the revenue front. General Electric also missed badly on revenues, and the shares responded accordingly. While Google blew away the street with record earnings and strong revenues, as CEO Eric Schmidt confidently said, the worst is behind us, with ad sales rebounding. Google shares soared back to $5.50. So we add them all up, and it was kind of disappointing, though not unexpected. As IBM noted, businesses still aren't spending. A survey of economists summed it up. The recession is over, but improvement is very slow. Whether you're talking jobs, where there's no improvement, credit, hard to find anywhere, and housing, stabilizing but far from rallying. There's one watchword for the times, caution. Business is cautious about spending, including new hiring, while the consumer is exceedingly cautious all around. At least for home buyers, if you put 20% down and have good credit, you should get a mortgage at or under 5%, plus you have a good selection of homes to choose from. On the macro data front, September retail sales were down less than expected, minus 1.5%, though up 0.5% ex autos, which helped propel the stock market to the 10,000 level for the first time since October 3, 2008. And various regional readings on manufacturing rose far more than expected, while the national reading on industrial production jumped for a third consecutive month. Then you have the inflation outlook. I've said for years now that this is not an issue, and it hasn't been. But as happens every quarter, it seems, many market players get all hot and bothered. Understand, when I talk about inflation, I'm not talking about rising property taxes or healthcare premiums. Yes, I'm paying more for each, just like you all are. But inflation, as measured by the consumer and producer price indexes, is non-existent. If you want to say they aren't accurate readings, that means you can then pick and choose your data to suit your purposes, which frankly is intellectually dishonest. Here's White House Economic Advisor Lawrence Summers on the economy this week, speaking to a meeting of the National Association of Business Economics. Lack of demand will be the major constraint on output and employment in the American economy for the foreseeable future, said Summers. The combination of low capacity utilization and substantial leveraging of household balance sheets raises questions about the sustainability of demand growth going forward. NABEA President-elect Lynn Reeser then added, "The good news is that this deep and long recession appears to be over, and with improving credit markets, the U.S. economy can return to solid growth next year without worry about inflation." Further, USA Today did a study of Bureau of Labor Statistics data and found that, quote, average weekly wages have fallen 1.4% this year for private sector workers through September after adjusting for inflation. The paper quotes economist Heidi Shierholz, who notes, Wages are usually the last thing to deteriorate in a recession, but it's happening now, and wages are probably going to be held down for a long time. This week, Colorado became the first state to lower its minimum wage since the federal law was passed in 1938. Around the nation, employees are working fewer hours than at any time since the government began tracking their data in 1964. Adjusting for inflation, hourly wages are falling. But now oil is spiking again, so the inflation hawks have resumed their screeching. They seem to forget, though, that if oil goes up much further, goodbye any thought of a strong recovery, because the consumer won't even be buying chestnuts for Christmas, should this turn out to be the case. And no recovery translates into deflation, as you can see is already happening on the wage front. There has been some better news on the global economy, particularly in Asia. China's leading government think tank reiterated it sees growth of 9% in 2010, and among the monthly indicators, power output, a key barometer here, rose 10% in September. Foreign direct investment for the month also rose substantially in China, while the export picture continues to improve. India's industrial production soared 10% in August, with auto sales rising 17% in September. Singapore's GDP rose 14.9% on an annualized basis in the third quarter, with the government saying a clear recovery is underway, but it added economic activity will remain below previous levels. A few other items. The Senate Finance Committee approved a health care bill, the Baucus Plan, with Republican Olympia Snowe of Maine voting for the proposal. But the bill taxes high-end insurance plans as its cornerstone, and the unions don't like this because they're the ones with the high-end plans. The bottom line is any health care legislation still must be reconciled with other versions that have come out of various Senate committees, let alone House proposals, so we have a long ways to go. Also understand that it's probably about 3 years before the benefits of any plan that gets through Congress are actually realized, but Medicare cuts and the tax increases would occur immediately. This creates a problem, as in you and I won't see any real changes except in the weight of our wallet. Now, how does that make you feel? It's been a long way back to down 10,000, but after hitting the mark early in the week on the heels of the solid earnings news from Intel and JP Morgan, as well as the better-than-expected retail sales number, stocks slipped Friday back below 10,000. Due largely to IBM's disappointing revenue forecast, to close at $99.95, though still up 1.3% on the week. The S&P 500 picked up another 1.5% and NASDAQ gained 0.8%. At Thursday's closing high, the S&P had rallied 62% off the March 9 low. Again, though, I am still preparing to pull the trigger due to Iran should conditions warrant. Though for now, the S&P and NASDAQ have officially attained the targets I set for the year. The S&P is up 20% year-to-date. NASDAQ's up 36%, exceeding my 30% target. On the bond side, regarding treasuries, the 10-year closed at 3.41%. And the federal budget deficit officially came in at $1.42 trillion for fiscal 2009. Government revenues plunged 16.6% from 2008, a similar number to that seen by many states these days, and the states will be slower to recover. So it was another week where the dollar dominated conversation, but at least the Treasury had some good news regarding August capital flows. Foreigners purchased $28.6 billion more in assets than they sold in the month, which follows a net increase of $15.3 billion in July and $90.2 billion in June. True, China trimmed its holdings of Treasury securities, but only by $3.4 billion to $797.1 billion, as remained the largest foreign holder of our paper. Japan, number two, boosted its Treasury holdings to $731 billion from $724.5 billion. Ergo, stop panicking. With the spectacular returns in bonds this year, money is flooding into taxable bond funds, a record $228 billion through October 7, which is a huge warning sign. The Bill Gross managed PIMCO Total Return Fund has taken in $36 billion in new assets, for example. I would add that Mr. Gross is as good as any in the business in terms of mitigating risk when rates inevitably start heading higher, and there are always opportunities in other bond markets to exploit, such as on the emerging market side. Investors just need to be prepared for far smaller returns. My other advice is to make sure you have your financial advisor explain the concept of duration so you'll better understand the risk inherent in your holdings. Time doesn't allow me to get into too many details concerning the latest scandal on Wall Street. The arrest of leading hedge fund operator Rajaratnam, founder of Galleon Group, who was charged with conspiracy and securities fraud in connection with an extensive insider trading scam. Rajaratnam and five others, some of whom worked at Intel, McKinsey & Company, and IBM, were caught on wiretaps, a first for a securities investigation, wiretaps, a first for a securities investigation of this kind. Rajaratnam was said to be worth $1.3 billion, according to Forbes. So the preceding is not good at all for Goldman Sachs and their bid to smooth over the coming bonus issue at year-end, with estimates now at anywhere from an average of $700,000 to $800,000 per employee. When you see a story like Galleon and rich hedgies abusing the system, it doesn't give Mr. and Mrs. Middle America, let alone Joe Jersey, a warm and fuzzy feeling about Wall Street and how they make their riches. I'm also very tired of the street's defenders, including some of the leading executives. Goldman's Lloyd Blankfein, for one, needs to shut up. Talking of how hard everyone works on Wall Street as if they were laboring in a steel mill back in the early 1900s, 6 days a week. Give me a break. And having spent 16 years myself on the street, I can speak this way. The rewards far outweigh the toil. And note to my Wall Street brethren, next time you complain about how hard you're working, think about the men and women of our armed forces in Afghanistan, for one. That's all for this week. I'll be back October 24th. I apologize about last week. I should have put up an earlier note on that. But after next week, we'll be basically on a regular schedule. Have a good week.